We're going to read, I'm going to read verses 8 through 19. Are you okay? Again, and most people break this chapter into like three sections. 1 through 6, there's a little interlude in chapter 6, or all the way to 7. And then 8 through 12, and then 13 through 16 is kind of its own little section, and then 17 through the end of the chapter. But we're going to be looking at verses 8 through 19. Let me read it, and then I'm going to kind of backtrack a little bit. Beginning in verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore also there was born of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. All these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them, and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, and he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise men even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Again, what the writer of Hebrews is saying, he's explaining to his readers, people that were getting really tired of the, or had come through some persecution, things were getting tough, they started to waver and their faith was getting weak, and he's trying to encourage them, don't go back. Jesus is a better sacrifice, it's a better, everything that we find in Christ is better than the old sacrifices. Do not go back. And when he comes to chapter 11, he's going to give them examples of people that lived by faith in their history. All these people, they would recognize. And again, let me go back to kind of verse 1. What the writer of Hebrews is saying, and I just kind of wrote items that I think he's explaining to us about faith. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. We're going to look at that in a minute with Abraham. There is this assurance. It's almost, and I said this before, it's almost counterintuitive. The very thing we should have assurance for, we can't see. And it's things that are hoped for. These songs that we sang. When we bring up our prayer request, whether it's, you get a phone call that a lady has had a heart attack. You get a family that has to flee their husband. The trials of life just wear you out. 19 families. How do you even begin to comprehend the struggle that would be and the questions you would have? Where is God in that? And that's what these people were facing. And what the writer of Hebrews is saying is, think about this. We have the assurance of things hoped for, a better thing, a better life, not this earth. And it's the conviction of things not seen. we'll get into that with Abraham. When God came to Abraham, he said, leave Ur. I don't want to jump ahead of myself. He didn't know where he was going. You know, it'd be like getting in the car. If we were going on or you're headed to Prescott and you get in the car and the kids say, where are you going? Well, we don't know. You know, you just don't do that. The writer of Hebrews saying it is the conviction of things not seen. These are promises that God made us. And it's the conviction that he will not lie. That the stuff of this life that me, get so worried about and so concerned about. I think the writer of Hebrews is trying to get our eyes off of that. Third thing, it says in verse 6, it says, there's no pleasing God without faith. You want to make him happy? Trust him. Have faith. Listen to his promises. And I'll tell you, when I'm saying this out loud, I'm thinking, oh, Bob, you know, you still worry, you still. So I'm not, and I don't think the writer of Hebrews is saying to them, this is a piece of cake. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But there's, if you want to please God, trust him. Faith works different for different people. As he's going through all of these people, from Abel to Enoch, it's different for everybody. They face different events. Enoch walked with God and he never died. Could I do what Abraham did? That isn't the question. That really isn't the point that the writer of Hebrews is saying. He says, just look at Abraham. And who did he trust? I don't think I could do what Moses did. That's not what the writer of Hebrews is saying. Faith looks and works different in different lives. Don't look at me. Don't look at Moses. Well, what I think he's saying is God is faithful, and it works different for different people. Faith looks out, not around. Even though we mixed up the songs, it wasn't the last one. It was a song about looking out to our future, our real future. Not tomorrow, not the job I have to face, not the struggles I have to face. It's looking way out. Because the minute we start looking around, well, what do I have to face? What is so-and-so facing? He seems so much, he has so much more faith than me. We just got a letter. Diane put that, I don't know, did you see that letter from her cousin? It's a cousin, right? Debbie? What's her name? Kogie, the Kogies. Grace Henserling. Grace Henserling, that's her, yeah. Did you put it on the, yeah. Did you read that letter? Did you read it? I mean, this girl has, lives in, it's Columbia, right? You know, and I'm thinking, wow, I couldn't do that. The point is not, God didn't call me to Columbia. But look at the faith that God has taking care of Grace Henserling. She has back problems, she fell. I mean, faith looks out, not around. Faith is and then the final verse in verse 19, I think it says, faith is a calculated risk in the character of God. We'll get into that in a minute. So let me just kind of go through the first verses 8 through 10. This is all, he's going to jump to Abraham, and Abraham takes a major portion of this chapter right here. Beginning in verse 8, by faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. When we went through the book of Genesis, how long have we been doing Genesis? Was it a year? Wow. Read those stories. I mean, it is really kind of an amazing story. He's sitting in Ur, and God says, okay, leave your home, and I'm going to go to a place I'm going to show you. And he's like, well, where am I going? A place I'll show you. Where is that? Just go. Just go. And he went, not knowing where he was going. Pulled up his roots and left. You know, I thought coming to Dallas was a big deal. You know, I was really the first one out of all of our family that left Chicago. Nobody leaves Chicago. It's like the family, you know. But I didn't say to Diane, well, let's get in the car. She would have said, where are you going? Well, we're going to go to Dallas. Can you imagine just leaving, taking God at his word, that said, I'm going to show you where to go. Okay. And he started, and in those days, the only way you could go was the Fertile Crescent. That's what I remember hearing that when I was in high school, never understood what it was, but it's that going up the Tigris River, going up into Harran, and then back down the mountains down the Jordan River, and it ends up in Israel. But he went not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. He was an alien. How many of you have been to a foreign country? I mean, it is odd. It's a little odd, isn't it? I mean, and China is really odd. I mean, different language, different. When we went to Hungary, it was kind of cool because they were all looked like us. You know, it was like, wasn't all black and it wasn't all, and they looked just like us. When you were in Budapest, it looked like you could have been in Chicago, except you go up to talk to somebody and they talk way different. But it's very odd. It's a different language. And when you're in that foreign country, what do you think about? Well, this is kind of a loaded question. What do you think about when you're in a foreign country and you're eating the food and you're? Do you ever long for home? Ever long for home? And this is, I think it's interesting. Because it doesn't say that Abraham longed for Ur, does it? And we'll get into that in a minute. It was not his home. It was a promise that God would give him this land, but he always lived there as an alien, as a foreigner. He never, well, I was going to say he never camped out there. That's all he did, was camp out there. He didn't build a home. He didn't get roots and say, you know, we're going to live on the northwest side of Chicago and we're going to build deep roots. And he was an alien. You ever feel like you don't fit? Even here, you ever feel like you're just culturally, we don't fit? The thing in Texas and down in Austin, you would think, you know, from our perspective, you would think this has got to be a no-brainer. Why not? And I didn't even read the bill. I don't know what the bill says other than it's trying to limit abortion. And then you listen to the national news, Channel 8 called it an anti-abortion bill. Channel 8, which I thought was pretty conservative. I'm like, we don't fit. We are aliens here. Our home is not here. Like that second to the last song we sing. I'm looking for a better place. And that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying about Abraham. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise. It was where God sent him, but he never put down roots there. This was not his final home. Verse 10, for he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. He was not going, oh man, we had it so good back in Ur. It was so nice there. He was looking out, not around. He wasn't looking back, but he's looking for a future city built by God. God, and I don't think it's that specific when you read Genesis that he promised them some later city. He promised them the land. Somehow in that, Abraham knew that there was a better promise, that there was something out there, that there's a city whose foundation is built by and designed by God. And I think, I don't know, if you're like me, it's real easy to get tied up in the stuff of this life and forget that I'm just passing through. This is a temporary. We are a vapor. You know, most of us are getting up there. You know, I look back, I said to Diane, what happened to 33 years? It happens. The kids are all gone. You know, we're now staring at each other. Like, and our kids are gone. You're like, they're gone. Don't look around here. And that's what he's saying to his readers. You look around at the struggles of this life, and you're going to camp out, and you're going to get worried, and you're going to understand that you are an alien. This is not your final home. And this also is kind of an aside, since we just took a trip to Branson. When you go on a trip, say you go to China, say you're going to stay there for 2 months or a week or something. And we tried to pack light. You know, I mean, every time I pack, it's like you pack, and then an hour later you should go back and unpack everything you know you're not going to use. Like you should be packing light, right? To really travel, if you're traveling internationally. But the first time I went, this lady told me, don't bring a lot of stuff because you're going to be pulling this bag through airports and train stations, and you don't want to drag the... Well, I didn't listen, so I brought a bunch of stuff. It was awful, dragging. And the point is, shouldn't we pack light? When I look in my garage, I'm like, I'm camping, more than camping out here. And I... Really, when I'm reading this, I'm like, this is, the writer is talking more to me than the, I live like this is it. And the writer is saying, look beyond this. Don't gather so much stuff. You're only here for a short time. The other, and when you're traveling, even though it is kind of a, it was nice to get home, isn't it? It is nice, after you've been gone for, and you might be in a really nice place. We're in a pretty nice place. Branson is beautiful, you know, I mean it's, well, Branson isn't beautiful, but around it is pretty, and the mountains are pretty. But you know what, I was like, when we walked in the door, and I was like, ah, it's home. The point is, that feeling of getting home ought to be what we think about our final home. You know, and we're going to look back at this time, and so when I think about what will we know about this life when we get there? I mean, I don't really know. All I know is that feeling of being home is what the writer of Hebrews wants us to think about. Not our past home, what it'll be like when we get to our real home. And that's what I think he's trying to get his readers to say. Don't look, don't worry so much about the struggles of this life. Don't go back. Don't think about the good old days and want to go back to the... And I think that's the point he's trying to make when he looks back at Abraham. And then he goes, he's going to jump to Sarah in verses 11 and 12. Well, Sarah and Abraham. By faith, even Sarah herself received the ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. And when you read the story of Sarah, I mean, I had to go back and kind of look at these stories. And if you, the promise was made several times. And the first time it was made, what did Sarah do? You've got to be kidding me. I am old. And just left. And then, you know, it was the two angels that came to, that were coming to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And they were telling Abraham the story. And they said, what? Will you laugh? Well, no. Yes, you did. And these are just, because I would laugh. You know, this is kind of, and the writer of Hebrews didn't bring it up, didn't say, well, you remember Sarah, you know, she kind of thought it was a joke. And some people thought it was, the commentaries are like, Abraham laughed also. Some people think he laughed with joy, like, wow, I finally get a son. Some people think they laughed because they didn't believe it. The writer of Hebrews doesn't bring that up. What he does say is, the last part of that verse, since she considered him faithful who had promised. There was some conviction that, wow, even though I'm old, if you say so, great story. This, I am considering you faithful. It isn't so much about Sarah's faith as it is her considering him faithful who promised. And if you want to look at it, it's in Genesis chapter 18, verses 10 through 15. It's a cool story. And then when Abraham laughed, it's actually the chapter before that in chapter 17. And in verse 12 of Hebrews, he says, therefore, also, since there was born of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of the heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand of the seas, sand which is by the seashore. That's going to come up in a little bit. Because God made Abraham a promise. I'm going to give you a son. And in that son, you are going to populate the world almost. Your descendants are going to be like the stars of heaven. Look up! And it's going to come up in a little bit. Because God made him a promise that he would be he would have tons of descendants through Isaac. In verse 12, he kept it. I mean, that's what he's talking about. Verse 13, now he has this kind of interlude, and he kind of explains to his readers what's going on with these people. It says, all these died in faith without receiving the promises. Up to that point, Abraham never had all the land. Remember, he got to get up on this mountain and look out. And eventually, I think the land of Israel was supposed to go all the way to the Tigris, right, or Euphrates River, from the Mediterranean Sea, all the way to the Tigris River. They never had it all. Abraham never saw all the promises. He looked ahead, never receiving all of them. But it says, having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance. You and I can't talk to anybody that's been to heaven yet. You know, I can't be there. I can't come. Nobody has come back and told me this is what it's going to be like. We're seeing it in a distance, and we welcome it because he is faithful who promised this. What is it going to be like? What is that transition going to be like from this life to that life? I don't know. You know, and you hear great stories of guys on their deathbeds. I don't know what it will be like. But the writer of Hebrews is saying, think back at Abel and Enoch and Noah and Abraham and Sarah, having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. This is not our home. We are just passing through, and it's pretty short time. For, and then there's this kind of weird thing here. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. What I think, it's an odd sentence. What I think the writer of Hebrews is saying is, if they would have thought about, if Abraham would have been continually looking back at Ur, he might have gone back. He might have gone back. And what he's saying to these readers, don't long for that going back to the old temple, the old sacrifices. You have a promise that Jesus is a better sacrifice. His blood covers all of your sins. Don't go back. That's what he's saying here. These people look forward, having seen through the eyes of faith this promise that God has for them. And it isn't here. And that's why when people talk about, we're not promised to be healthy our whole life. We're not promised that if you listen to enough of these preachers, you're promised wealth that only works here in the United States. You think of this Grace Hensarling living in the jungles of Colombia. They got nothing. The promise isn't here. It isn't wealth and health. It is a city whose foundation is designed and built by God. That's where my eyes ought to be. Readers, don't look back, or you'll run back. Don't do that. And then 17 through 19. This is like, let me read 16. But as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. I think it's in Colossians. There's this sense of being so heavenly minded, we can be earthly good. It's not like you're pie in the sky and I'm just dreaming about, I'm going to think about heaven, not worry, or not even think about this life. I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he's saying you can be so heavenly minded, it makes you earthly good. It puts this life in perspective, the struggles of this life, the trials of this life. What he's saying to these, the persecution, and he's going to get into that in the end of the chapter, is hard, but you can make it. Think about, be heavenly minded. That doesn't mean like Monday I got to, you know, I'm not going to be thinking about heaven much on Monday because I got work to do. You guys got work to do. But there's this sense that this isn't my home. I have a job that I have to do, and God's given me a job. But I really need to think beyond that. And then comes this probably the craziest test ever. I mean, when you read this, when you go back and read the story of what God asked Abraham to do, you're like, this, I don't get it. I mean, this seems nuts, seems crazy. Why would God do this? Verse 17 through 19. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendant shall be called." And he considered that God is able to raise men even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Several things when you think about this story. I mean, when you read this story, it wasn't like Abraham faltered. It says he went the next day. He didn't say, "Are you kidding?" He didn't say, "Wait a minute, can we rethink this? This is hard. I don't know if I can do this." It says none of that. And really, Hebrews almost explains what was happening in Abraham's head when God asked him to do this. Because it says he considered that God was able to raise him from the dead. The interesting thing about that I find in this story is I love to think about what Isaac thought. Now, some people think I just read one story that said they thought he was like 25 years old. I don't know. Most of us think he's like a kid, like it says the lad. You know, well, to a guy that's 100 and something, a 25-year-old is a lad. So most people think he's like in his 20s by this time. And I've never heard a sermon on what Isaac was thinking. You know, it took Abraham a lot of faith. How about crawling up on the altar? How about letting your dad tie you up? How about laying there, not screaming? I mean, when you picture this event in your head, you're like, Abraham was a giant. Until it starts to go, and when God stops him. The story is about God providing. You know, it took a lot of faith. It took a lot of faith by Isaac to climb up on that altar, or however he put him on it. I don't know. To not say to God, why would you do this? But the writer of Hebrews is saying, Abraham understood the promise of God. All right, God, you promised this was going to come through Isaac. You're going to have to raise him from the dead. That's all I can figure. If I sacrifice him, you're going to raise him up. And at the end, this was and he considered that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, and he also received him back as a type. There's this sense that God provided. If you read the story, God provided a lamb. This is where God's name, Jehovah Jireh, God will provide. And when I'm thinking, and this was only one test. I mean, this was a test for Abraham. And I'm thinking, I probably would have flunked it. But I'm supposed to look out, not around. I'm looking at Abraham not as an example and think, oh man, I have wimpy faith. The gist of that story is God provided a lamb. He made a promise, it's going to come through Isaac. And since you were willing to give him up, I'm going to provide for you. It's about God's faithfulness. It's about God's providing. And there's this, and when I read this and when I think about the original, the people that the book of Hebrews was written to, struggling with their faith and facing a future that didn't seem so bright. You know, compared to the struggles we face in our economy and something, nothing. And as I think through this, I'm like, and we came back to a house. We came back to we're getting our kitchen remodeled. We were able to do that. It was kind of nice. It was this lady that had a heart attack, I think lives paycheck to paycheck. No savings, no insurance, no. And I'm thinking, am I really trusting my savings more than... At the end of this story with Abraham, it was Jehovah Jireh. God provides. Is it okay to have a 401k and a retirement plan? Yeah, it better be okay. Is it okay to have health insurance? Am I trusting health insurance and not God that he keep me healthy? I think the issue is, We can have all, and I have those things. We can have those things. But you better not trust them. I better not trust it. That 401k could be evaporated in a second. Savings, the house, people in Prescott, we have a friend that lost everything up there. 5 acres, house, garage, all everything in it, gone. Trees, everything gone. And I think that what God wants, I think, us to understand, and I don't have to feel guilty about trying to save money and save. The point is, God is saying, don't trust those things. Because I'm the one that's faithful. Sarah, it says, since she considered him faithful who promised. Abraham considered God faithful who promised it was coming through Isaac. And I just wrote, there's this, and I'm thinking of saying this more to myself, I think. I need to trust God, not goods. Two little letters, an extra O and an extra S. I need to trust God, not goods. I need to trust the future. I need to look beyond and quit looking around at all the struggles of this life and look to the faithfulness of our Father. Trust God, not goods. Trust His promise, not what you see around you. Father, we, again, as we look into your word and understand what you, how faithful you have been in the past, that these events that are recorded here of men and women who took you at your word, who considered you faithful, who promised, that Father, that we not look at the people as much as the promise and the promise keeper. Father, when I compare myself sometimes, anytime, to men like Abraham and Moses and Noah, we all fall short. The point is, you have made promises to us through your Son, your only begotten Son, that you allowed and you sacrificed for us. Father, as we leave this place and we face, we still have to live in this world, just teach us to live as aliens, that we travel light, that we trust you and not the stuff of this world. Thank you for this time, and thank you for our church. Thank you for your faithfulness and your goodness and your mercy to us. It's in your Son's name I pray.